Get a deeper connection with the Cougars of BYU Sports.
God gives us a gift, and we use that gift until He takes it away.
Deep Blue.
Just sitting down afterward and being really tired and thinking like, wow, I just won the U.S. Championship.
This is Deep Blue. Here's your host, Jason Shepherd.
Thanks for tuning in to a brand new episode of Deep Blue. This is the show where we get to know the person behind the number that you see on the field or the court. This episode features a Cougar who didn't play or coach any sport here at BYU, but he was his high school's mascot. It's part two of our interview with BYU president C. Shane Reese. In part one, we discuss what a day in the life of President Reese's looked like, what it was like receiving the call to be the president of BYU, and the role athletics plays at the university. Go check out part one if you haven't already had the chance. In part two, we're going to find out how President Reese ended up at BYU as a student, but first, we find out about growing up as an only child in New Mexico.
Life for me when I was young was amazing. My mom, so my folks were divorced when I was about 2 months old. And my mom and I moved, I was born in Logan, Utah. And after 2 months or so, we moved to Albuquerque, New Mexico. And first of all, I love Albuquerque. A shout out to my friends in the 505. my mom and I had a great existence. I didn't realize that times were as tight as they were when I was growing up because my mom just sort of, she made life seem amazing. She was an incredible mother. I cannot say enough about my mom and what an incredible influence for good she was on me. She taught me to work hard. She taught me that the way you treat people matters. She taught me, I think, all of the most important life lessons I've learned came from my mom, and I saw it mostly from her example. She is an incredible people person. She's amazing. And so we grew up in a very kind of a, I will say, a lower income class neighborhood, and I grew up sort of playing ball on the blacktop streets. We didn't have a lot of sports courts close, but we would go out and we would play stickball, and we would throw the football around, and you'd think we were on a grass surface because, you know, sometimes it was tackle football on the blacktop. But I grew up playing a lot of sports after school on the streets with my buddies. So I loved the time growing up in Albuquerque, and I grew up there going to Manzano High School where I was the mascot until I went to BYU my freshman year. And candidly, I think there was a little bit of disappointment in my mom. My mom went for a semester or so to Utah State. Mm-hmm. And like I said, I was born there. And I think she was hoping that I was going to be an Aggie. So, but I remember when I told her I was going to apply to BYU, she was certainly supportive of the idea. But I think secretly, if she had her way, she'd have me go be a Utah State Aggie.
So what was it about BYU that pulled you here?
You know, I had this good friend in high school, and his uncle was the Cougar Club chair or local alumni chapter chair. And I remember going and watching the Cougars play New Mexico. And it was a game when Mike Smith was at the free throw line, and the pit is the worst place to go if you're a visiting team on the planet.
Yes.
And I remember his uncle gave us all BYU caps, which I thought was someone just gave me a cap and it said BYU on it. And I remember how brutal people were to us because
no
we were
idea
there.
What was going to happen by putting that hat on?
I'd watched the games in the pit, but I'd never been treated like that before. Someone threw a beer bottle as Mike Smith was shooting free throws, and it landed in the key. And I remember thinking, I just remember as a young kid having this thought, wow, if they hate this school that much, there must be something to it. So that was probably the first seed that I got because I had no familial connections to BYU. But I remember that cap. In fact, I still have that cap that he gave. It's atrocious because it's very much a 1970s BYU cap. But I still have that. And that was the first time I thought, this is a cool school. They beat the Lobos that day. So
there we go. That's right. What was, if I understand correctly, when you got here, you kind of went through some, is this where I'm supposed to be? And you debated whether or not to actually stay or not. What made you stay?
Yeah, this was an amazing experience, especially looking back on it in retrospect. I was a first generation college student. My mom had been to a semester, but she didn't graduate from college. And when I got to BYU, first of all, I grew up in Albuquerque, New Mexico, where there were not lots of members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And when I got here, I thought, oh, I don't know what I've gotten myself into. I now realize that some of that was homesickness. I realize that some of it was being in an environment that was completely different from my high school experience. And I was candidly just unhappy. I had roommates and I had people in my dorms who were all great people, but they seemed to be fitting in and I didn't. At least that was my perception of what was going on. And I remember calling my mom and saying, Mom, I'm done. I do not like it. I'd given it 3 days. It was during that period when we had Y groups on campus, mm-hmm. and I'd gone through all the Y group activities. I felt like I'd given it the college try. I told her I'm ready to come home. And she said, and I was pretty upset. And she said, well then I'll come get you. I need to wait till the weekend, but I'll come get you and we'll bring you back and you can go to UNM. In the meantime, she reached out to our home bishop, and she said, Shane's struggling. And our home ward bishop said, well, you know what? You ought to tell Shane to reach out to my brother. My brother's on the faculty. He'd love to come visit, have Shane come visit. And candidly, I was thinking, there's no way I'm going to walk in. I am my social security number. I've been to all the lines on campus, and they don't want to know my name. They want to know my social security, which was our ID number, mm-hmm. at the time. They don't want to know me by name, and there's no way I'm walking into this big professor's office. In fact, it happens to be a law professor. Walk into his office and say, hi, I'm Shane Reese. He's not going to want to talk to me. But for some reason, I had this strong impression that I needed to follow through on my bishop. I loved my bishop. He was a pivotal figure in my life. And I figured, out of respect to him, I needed to go visit his brother before I jumped in the car and drove back to New Mexico with my mom. Well, it turns out that I went, and this was a then very young law school professor named Kevin Worthen. His brother was Clyde Worthen, my bishop in Albuquerque, and Kevin Worthen took me in, and candidly, I don't think he had anything wildly profound to tell me, but I think he saw me, and I think he talked to me and called me by my name instead of my student ID number, and that made all the difference in the world. I remember one thing he told me in particular. He said, you know, I think if you give it a chance, you'll grow to really love BYU. And have I ever. I have grown to love BYU, and I have forever and will forever be grateful to Kevin Worthen, a law school professor who spent some time with a measly undergraduate student who was a little lost at the time and encouraged him with some fairly simple words. It has made all the difference for me. I will forever be grateful for that time he spent with me. It was an amazing thing.
For those who are not familiar with BYU, Kevin Worthen is or was the president of BYU before President Reese. With that knowledge now, how much more fondly do you look back on that initial meeting and how everything played out? You talk about tender mercies.
Oh, what a tender mercy. I can't talk enough about the value of that. It is in part why I think it's vital for every student on this campus to have an experience like that. We right now are experiencing an epidemic of loneliness among this generation. They're struggling. People will point to COVID and they'll point to social media. And the truth is, it preceded COVID in its initiation. So it was well before then. And there's lots of causes. I'm not so interested in admiring the problem. I would like to find solutions. And so one of the things I love, this is a game changer for us as a campus, is we just initiated this semester, first time ever, winter semester 2024, requiring every student to take a class that's small in size, 24 students. So each student will know a faculty member, and maybe as important, a faculty member will know 24 students by name. And they're required to go do stuff together, go to devotional, go to a game, go to a performing arts event, go hike the Y. They have a certain number of assignments that are just set up to go do stuff. The sense of connectedness they get out of this class are remarkable. They also get a healthy sense of the vision of the university. What makes BYU different than other institutions of higher education? All of which are great in their own right. But we do some things differently. Why do we do them differently, and what makes this a special place? They get a sense of the resources that are available to them. This course really was set up to make sure that no student was suffering in silence, that they had their own Kevin Worthen set up when they first arrived on this campus. This fall semester we'll have 284 sections of this class taught on this campus, and I could not be more excited about it.
What a great opportunity. Was a mission for you always in the cards, or because you ended up serving a mission in Taiwan, I believe?
I did, yeah. It was not, one of the things is that my mom was very much about letting me make a decision. And candidly, before I came to BYU, I always thought, well, yeah, I might do that. But it was certainly not something that I was like laser focused in. But when I got to BYU, I took a class on mission prep as part of my freshman courses. And it was taught by Brother Durant. And he was a former MTC president, Mark and Devin Durant's father. He was incredible. And there is no question after taking that class that I was going on a mission. And not because I felt any pressure or any threat or anything else. He inspired me to make a decision to serve the Lord. And from then on, I was pretty locked in. But it took someone to share their experience and testimony with the value of missions. And candidly for me, I look back, the best decision I ever made was to marry my wife. No question, without a doubt. The most pivotal experience, transformative experience for me as a human being was the time I served as a missionary for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints in Taiwan. I grew to love the people of Taiwan. I still try to keep up with my Chinese a little bit. And it was unbelievable for me. I made some incredible friends. I still keep in touch with my MTC district to this day.
Oh, wow.
It was an amazing experience for me in Taiwan.
And correct me if I'm wrong, it was a couple of months after coming home from your mission that you met your wife. Is that right?
That is. We
not,
met,
not that long after coming home.
We met fairly quickly. I got home and I decided I wanted to jump back into school because, like most missionaries, I found myself bored day two after being home. I had all these
well,
plans.
Well, now what do I do?
Exactly. I had all these plans for how I was going to spend my time, but I was bored right away. And so I jumped right back into school immediately. And I remember, my wife hates it when I tell this story, but I'm going to do it anyway. I remember I was washing dishes at the sink in our apartment at Liberty Square, and we had a view from our sink into this courtyard area, and I saw this beautiful woman walking across the courtyard of Liberty Square, and I was struck by her. And I remember thinking, I got to meet. It wasn't like I had this inspiration I was going to marry her that day, but I did have this sense I got to meet her someday. And about 2 days later, her roommate said, "Hey, can my roommate have a ride? We're going to because we were going to the Manti pageant of all things." And I said, "We said sure." There was me and my roommate, and she had brought her roommate. And when she showed up, it was her, and my heart lit up. And of course, my roommate said, "Oh, well, Wendy can sit in the back with me on the way down." And I thought, "Oh, he beat me to the punch." but luckily enough, she rode back in the front with me on the way back from Manti, and that began really a year and a half of dating until I married her in the Manti Temple.
What a great story! So you're at BYU. What pushes you towards statistics? Was that always something that had interested you? Why go that direction?
Yeah, it's a great question. My mom, when BYU used to send out notifications to incoming freshmen who had done well on the math portion of the ACT. And so, and they'd send it from the Department of Statistics. They'd say, hey, we noticed you did well on the math portion of the ACT. You should consider statistics as a major. And candidly, statistics, I know today it's a real sexy discipline, but it wasn't really then. And when we got that letter, I did okay on the math section of the ACT. My mom said, whatever you do, and by the way, she denies this, whatever you do, don't go in to statistics. They're the most boring people on the planet. And I don't know what got into me, but I came in as an engineering major and I didn't love engineering. So I decided I was going to go into business. And one of the prereqs for business, because I had all the math requirements already checked off the box, but one of the requirements was a stats class. And I took intro stats, and I'm telling you, I fell in love with statistics as a freshman at BYU. I knew without question that's something I wanted to do for my career. So I went throughout my mission without changing my mind on that one, and then came back and I got a bachelor's degree, a master's degree from BYU in statistics, and then I went to Texas A&M for a PhD, all in statistics. I really do. I'm super passionate about stats.
What led you to College Station? Why was that the school? And how did that experience go for you?
That's a great question. My advisor, so I only applied to one school for PhD. By the way, if for all your listeners out there planning on going to get a PhD, do not use this approach. It's strategically stupid. But I applied to one school, and it was Texas A&M. And I applied at the time. You had to take the general record examination, or GRE, to get in. And I remember I sent my scores to Texas A&M, and the graduate coordinator got my scores and called me. And they get like 400 applications for their 20 spots every year. It's highly competitive. And he called me, and I thought, this is great. He's calling to tell me that he's going to offer me some kind of a fellowship because my scores were so great. And his first question was, he first said, congratulations on your math score. It was remarkable. This is the kind of score that's going to get you into great stats programs all across the country. But we have a question about your verbal score. And I said, oh, well, shoot, what's the question? He said, is English your native language? Because apparently that year, every single foreign student that applied had a higher verbal GRE score than I did. So it's really a miracle that I got into Texas A&M is what I'm saying. But I had an amazing experience at Texas A&M. We loved our experience in the church. This was the first time my wife had lived outside of the state of Utah, and she loved the sense of family and community that we felt within the church in College Station. We met some incredible people that we still stay in contact with these days, just some of the best friends we've ever had. I played interfaith softball with our church team. Chuck Knobloch came and played against us one time.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was great. We just had amazing experiences. By the way, these interfaith softball leagues are how church softball should look. It was so amazing. Super competitive while we were on the pitch, but then we all gathered for prayer afterwards, and we were great friends. We loved our time in College Station was one of the more memorable times of our lives. We had two children there. Our oldest two daughters were born in Texas. And so Texas College Station especially will always hold a special place in our heart.
Coming up after the break, President Reese discusses his career as a statistician and returning to his alma mater. This is the Deep Blue Podcast on BYU Radio. Welcome back to the Deep Blue Podcast. My name is Jason Shepherd. Today's guest is BYU President Shane Reese. We just got done talking to him about graduating from Texas A&M with a PhD in statistics. One of the places that you ended up working at was the Los Alamos National Laboratory, and that's the center that helped Dr. J. Robert Oppenheimer. Obviously, everybody's familiar with that because of the movie, and it sort of brought it back on the Manhattan Project. That's where he did that. What was your role there, and what kind of data did you help analyze while you were there?
Well, you know, my kids ask me this all the time while I was working there, and still ask me. And what I tell them is, I could tell you, but I'd have to kill you. I was with the statistical sciences group at Los Alamos, and we did some amazing high-level science. Some of it was related to the nuclear weapons program. You know, one of the things they're really interested in is how do you maintain a nuclear arsenal without testing? Nobody wants us to test nuclear weapons anymore. There's some rough stories about when we were testing. So you got to be able to maintain that without testing. And so that involves a lot of statistical modeling at a very high level. And it has applications to a whole bunch of different areas. In fact, the interesting thing is some of the projects that I worked on, the application of the methods we were developing were not only used at the nuclear weapons laboratory, but we transitioned those into work we did at Procter & Gamble studying diaper development. So somehow those things have connections to one another. But it was an amazing time. I loved my time at Los Alamos and still have some loose connections there today.
So why then come back to BYU? What was the opportunity that presented itself that you said, yeah, this is the right move for us?
Yeah. I didn't know if I would ever leave Los Alamos. My wife and I, we felt prompted. We actually interviewed for a job at BYU the same time we were interviewing for a job at Los Alamos. My mom still lives in Albuquerque today, and we thought that we were, in fact, going to stay. We had built a brand new home in Santa Fe, New Mexico, which if you've ever been to Santa Fe, it's a magical place. We loved our time in Santa Fe. I loved getting up to Los Alamos from Santa Fe. The drive was soothing. The scenery was majestic. It was an amazing place. And so we thought there was a brand new temple in Albuquerque. We thought it was all laid out for us to set down roots and not pick them up anytime soon. And then I had a colleague who just invited me to apply once again for an open faculty position in the Department of Statistics. And like most things in life, you follow promptings. And we did follow a prompting to put our name in the hat. And while we were here, my wife and I both got a super strong impression that this is where we were supposed to be. And candidly, my first reaction was maybe even a little bit of disappointment because we had such a great life brewing in Santa Fe, New Mexico. But boy, we have never looked back nor regretted having had such an incredible, vibrant, amazing experience here at BYU. It's been amazing for our family. It's been amazing for our marriage. It's been amazing for our testimony development. It has been an unbelievably rewarding ride.
I know you have told this story before, but while you're at BYU, you have opportunities that pop up. And one of those is you get a phone call from a pretty influential person with the Philadelphia Eagles. Tell everybody that story and the importance of a coin.
That's great. One of the things that I've always tried to do, I did this when I was in graduate school, is to stay connected to sports analytics. And candidly, I had a professor at Texas A&M who was my mentor in so many ways. And he and I would stay up late at night while we were there at the office, and we would be arguing who's the greatest of all time in any different sport. He was a huge hockey guy, and I was a baseball guy and a basketball guy. And we would argue till we were blue in the face about who was the greatest of all time. And he had more knowledge of older players. I had more knowledge of kind of the younger players, and we would have, I mean, we were talking full on screaming debates about who was the greatest of all times. Well, it turns out that we ended up writing a paper that tried to address this. We collected all kinds of data trying to identify the greatest home run hitter of all time, the greatest hitter for average, the greatest hockey player of all time, and the greatest golfer of all time. And we wrote this big paper, and it was really well received. We worked really hard on the modeling. And it won an award in our discipline for the best paper of the year, and still like one of my favorite things. But that set me off on a research career where I could do sports analytics. Can you imagine that, combining the two loves of my life, stats and sports, into one thing? It is an unbelievable thing. So we wrote this paper, and that got me off on this idea of sports analytics being a research area that could be respected in the discipline.
Right.
So we'd been publishing papers, and we did some work in NASCAR and did some work in the NFL and did some work in the NBA. And so one day I'm sitting there and I get this phone call, and the phone call was from a Philly. This was when we actually had phones you had to pick up. I know that some people won't even know what that means any longer.
Like, wait, what?
Yeah, exactly. And it was a Philly area code. And I picked it up and said, and the person on the other end said, "Hi, this is Andy Reid. Is Shane Reese there?" Mm-hmm. And honestly, I said, "This is not Andy Reid," and I hung up the phone. And then the phone rang back again in a second. And it was the same number. And then I was actually a pit in my stomach, scared. I was like, this might actually be Andy Reid. I picked it up, and it was Andy Reid. And he said, "Is Shane Reese there?" I said, "Oh, this is he." And my voice did actually do that. It cracked and went high. And he said, "You know, I just met a guy that you know, Carl McGowan, on a flight, the great legend of BYU volleyball. And they were grad assistants at the same time. And Carl talked to Andy, because we'd done some work for BYU men's volleyball team, and said, you might want to talk to this guy, Shane Reese. He's got some analytics that might be useful to you." So Andy called up and said, I'd love to have you guys come out here, me and a colleague, Gil Fellingham, and we'll just talk a little bit about analytics and how it might impact football. So we did a few projects for Andy. And it was an amazing experience to be that close to a guy, Andy Reid, who I have great love and admiration for. He's an incredible – I hope your listeners know. I'm sure they see the stories.
Yeah.
But he's as good a person, one-on-one, in person, as he appears publicly. He is the real deal. He's an amazing guy, amazing alum of BYU, amazingly dedicated disciple of the Savior in his life. He's an amazing guy. Anyway, we did a few projects, went a little while, and then he said, "You know, would you be interested in a front office job here at the Philadelphia Eagles?" And they brought me out. My wife and I picked me up at the airport in Mr. Lurie's personal vehicle.
Wow.
Brought us to the facility. I spent the day with Andy and the team, and I spent an hour and a half with Mr. Lurie saying, "We want to be the first to do Moneyball for football." Mm-hmm. He'd read the book. This was prior to the movie even coming out. And I was like, "Well, I think I can do that." And so by the time I got home, he had called and had offered me the position. He described it as the longest contract in the building, and it was front office. If the team were to win a Super Bowl ring, I would be among the people wearing one of those Super Bowl rings, which I thought, man, you have got to be kidding me. And for a moment, the thought occurred, I'm just going to say yes right now. This is what I feel like I was built for. I've been working on my sports analytics. I've developed my stats chops. I love sports. I'm a passionate guy. And so we thought we were gone. We really did. And my wife and I made a long pros and cons list of what we needed to do. And we had this two-week period by which we needed to make the decision. They don't give coaches that long to make those decisions, but they'll give the stats guy a little longer. 2 weeks to make this decision, and we had gone through the ringer in terms of trying to make this decision with our pros and cons list. And by the time we got done, they were pretty equal in length, and we were exhausted and quite frankly frustrated that we weren't really sure about which direction to go. In one breath, we loved BYU. In another breath, this was the opportunity of a lifetime, my dream job, candidly. And so when we got to the day of the decision, we could not decide. And so any good statistician knows that if you have two equal opportunities, the way to solve it is to flip a coin.
Yeah.
And so I told my wife, this is how we're going to solve this. We can't come to a resolution. So she grabbed the coin off the countertop. There happened to be a quarter down there. These days you wouldn't even be able to find one. But she grabbed this quarter, and she flipped it. And I remember standing, this is where we gathered for prayer before I left for work every day. I grabbed the coin out of the air, and I said, "Now listen, we're not doing the best 2 out of 3. I know how this game works. It is heads we go, tails we stay."
And you were set. Like, you were willing. This it was all coming down to this.
Binding.
Okay.
Binding wow. contract for us.
Okay.
Because we had just been through it, and we were tired. So she grabbed the coin, and I let her flip it, and she flipped it. And it is one of those moments where you can see each rotation of the coin in your mind. It's slow motion. It really is
it's
one
like
of those moments.
It's like you're in the Matrix, exactly. And everything just slows down.
So we're in that moment, and the coin hits and bounces, clink, clank, clank, clink, and it rolls and it lands against the wall on its side.
No way.
on its side. Now, I'm a statistician. The probability of this happening is zero. It cannot happen. And my wife and I, we literally looked at each other and basically in tears thinking, you have got to be kidding me. This didn't just happen. But really candidly, we felt like that was in so many ways, despite being this improbable event, probability zero event, that it was the Lord's way of saying, you're not going to get off that easy. That's not how you make decisions when I'm involved. And so we took a trip to the temple and that later that afternoon, and we had an amazing experience, and we felt in no uncertain terms through a really interesting and challenging experience with our coin flip, that the Lord was aware of us, and that really we felt prompted that we needed to stay here at BYU, even with this dream job sitting in front of us.
And the rest is history. And let's bring it back to today for our final question. The opportunity that you have as the president of BYU, what does that opportunity mean to you right now in your life?
Well, first of all, it carries a significant and, for me, sacred trust. When Elder Christofferson gave the charge at my inauguration for me to be the CEO in charge of all the assets, all of the activities, all of the efforts of the university, that was heavy. But then he added one more C-level role, and he charged me to be the chief moral and spiritual officer of the university. That is both a tremendous opportunity and a tremendous weight. That is never lost on me, the importance of not only doing all the things that we ask other presidents to do, but that I focus heavily and resolutely on the moral and spiritual development of each member of our campus community, whether it be our employees, whether it be our students, whether it be whoever it is, our alumni, that there is some sense of the spiritual and moral character of all who are within our community, that's strengthened and buoyed up as part of my role as president. I see that both as the opportunity and the challenge that I face. Candidly, there are so many institutions of higher education who at one point had a close tie to a sponsoring church. Most of those have diverted from their sponsoring institution. We will double down on our commitment, on our connection, on our alignment with the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, certainly under my administration, and I can only see that happening in perpetuity. It's certainly what's been done by those who filled this seat before I got here, and I'm going to continue to maintain that focus, in part because of Elder Christofferson's charge to fill that role.
President Reese, I know how busy you are, and for you to be able to carve out this much time to come hang out with me and chat, I cannot say thank you enough. This has been an absolute pleasure, and thank you so much. This was great.
Well, thanks for having me, and by the way, we love what's happening with the Deep Blue Podcast, what you do to explore the real in-depth stories of what people do and to promote what I think is the goodness in the world through those stories is remarkable. So thank you for having me.
Well, thank you, President. I really appreciate that. My name is Jason Shepherd. Josh Bergstrom and Ben Hall produced this episode. Deep Blue's senior producer is Cleon Wall. You can download and subscribe to Deep Blue on all podcast platforms or find all episodes on the BYU Radio app. Deep Blue is a production of BYU Radio.